All right. Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us. We're very happy that you're here, even though it's the last session of the day, and we're very close to the opening of the expo, which, as we all know, is a moment to have a drink, to eat something, and to try to get as much swag as possible from the different vendors. I hope you already had a great day today. It started great with the keynote. I hope you weren't in line for the Surface. I hear today 3 hours and more to get your Surface. That's quite long. But anyway, if you already have it, great. If you don't have, maybe wait 1 or 2 days and then we get it. We're very happy to be here and to talk to you today about System Center Data Protection Manager and Veeam Backup and Replication better together. I'm Mike Ressler. I am the Microsoft Evangelist for Veeam Software. And today I'm joined by Doug Hazelmond, who is the Vice President of the Product Strategy Group at Veeam. And today what we're going to talk to you about is actually a conceptual session where we want to show you with an example how you can use two backup products to build an entire disaster recovery solution for your environment, whatever you're running. So what we have on our agenda today is first we're going to have a little chat about why we still need disaster recovery and business continuity. Now, most of us probably are in the backup world or at least have to do backups within their organization. So they will say, yeah, of course we need it. But the fun thing is the more we're talking to people in large companies, they start to doubt why we still need backup. So I want to give you a few pointers why you still need it in today's modern world with all the cloud solutions and with private clouds and hybrid clouds and that kind of things. I also want to talk to you about different challenges that we're meeting, that we're seeing with customers. Why do we have difficulties getting all the solutions into their environments? What are people complaining about? How are we going to tackle those? We're going to talk about those as well. And then I'm going to talk about the scenario that I want to present you. Now, this is going to be a very small scenario, a couple of hypervisors, some VMs, not too big. Most infrastructures, of course, are much bigger than what we're going to show you. But you should think that what we are showing you, you can actually just make it bigger and bigger and still use the same tactics as what we're going to deliver or show you here today. So after I've explained the scenario, we're going to talk about protection. We're going to see that we're going to take a three-layered approach to make sure that our plan is working and that we can do a lot of stuff with it. And then we're going to talk about those different layers. Now, after we got protection, the most important thing, and unfortunately something that has been forgotten a lot when you do backup projects, that's how we're going to recover the things. What are our possibilities? What is the best approach we can do to be up and running again as soon as possible with as little data loss as possible? Because that, in the end, is what we need to foresee when we're doing disaster recovery. Finally, we're going to talk to you about some additional benefits that you have with the different products, not only for your disaster recovery plan, but just the fact if you have those products that you can do much more with it during your day-to-day job. What we're going to talk about is basically put your backups to work. Make sure you have those backups. You have invested in the infrastructure and to the software. Well, let's use them for our day-to-day basis, even if we don't have a disaster, and by God, I'm sure we all hope that we never have a disaster in our environment. And then finally, we're going to go over some little best practices, and at the end, there's of course Q&A time. Now, we're going to try to wrap this up in time, preferred even be done a little bit earlier, so you can rush out to the expo and get all the nice stuff that you can get from the vendors, all right? So let's get this started. So first, why? And really, this is something I've been talking more and more to IT pros on a daily basis. They come to me and they say, well, I talk to my CTO, I talk to my manager, and he basically tells me, why do I still need those backups? Because if you look at it, modern data centers, private clouds, hybrid clouds, whatever you can think of, they are very highly resilient. They're highly automated. You have clustering, you have failover systems, you got geo-clustering in many cases, you've got all this mechanical systems, you got all this automation inside, and that everybody is saying, well, if one exchange server going down, I've got a DAC, I mean, the other one will take over. Now you got SQL always on, so who cares if the SQL server dies? We got another one, we have time to rebuild this one and make sure that everybody, that everything is up and running. The same for domain controls and any other applications that today have resiliency on the application layer. Now that's all great. And of course, now many managers start to ask those questions. But in the end, if you look at all these systems, there's still one big problem with it. it won't protect you against certain things. One of them being data corrupting malware. Even if you have the SQL always on, but somewhere there's a malware that destroys your data and tables, well, it is being replicated. Same with Exchange. Now, I know that the guys from Exchange will say, you know what, you can have those databases that are 1 hour behind. That's great, but how fast can you detect that we have malware, and how fast can you stop it to make sure that the malware is not going there? So you still need those backups. You still need that disaster recovery. What about unforced user errors? Or forced user errors, depending on how you look at it. It's something we still see today, not only for end users, but also administrators. By accident, they delete something they shouldn't have. Do you still have it on the other side? Yes, no, depending on your settings. How fast can you make sure you cover for that? And maybe you just need your backup at that time. Misbehaving applications. Now, luckily, we see this less and less. But just a year ago, I was at a customer who called me and said, we got an issue, we installed an update of an application, and because of a mistake in the SQL script, it removed an entire table with very important data of that application. Now, we want to go back, and the vendor said, no problem, we'll go back and go to the previous version, because indeed we made a mistake in the upgrade path, but where's my data? It was destroyed in SQL, so we had to revert backups. So you have nothing with your private clouds at that moment. Now, Windows updates, again, this is not really happening that much anymore, but it still can happen that it breaks an application, destroys some data, and you need to be able to fix that. And finally, we still have disaster 101. Even if you have the most best failover systems, clusters, whatever you want to think of, what if your entire infrastructure burns down? What are you going to do? So these are a few things why you still need that backup, why you still need to be sure that you have that specific protection. And then, of course, you have other reasons to have backup. It could be that it's for legacy reasons. It could be that you need those archives for 30 days or longer because you're compliant to SOX or whatever. So you all need that backup, and you can't do that with all the other system. So here we go. Now let's talk about a few of those challenges that we have when I talk to people that need to implement backups. The first challenge they have is time. Time. I mean, who of you here is working on backups? And I assume most of you, well, at least some of you. Who of you is really under pressure not to do on a daily basis backup alone, but has to do other administrative tasks as well? Quite a few. And we see that more and more that, you know, backup is something you do on the side. So what you need to do is you need to develop yourself a strategy where you don't spend too much time on your backups on a daily basis. And it's very, very important these days, but it's also a challenge. We already see many organizations where they have multiple teams running on backups, and basically they're getting the notification, well, you're going to need to spend less time because it's costing us way too much money. And we don't really have profit on it. Although when there is a fire, they're probably not going to say that, but they do it today. There are some more challenges. You need to be in control. I love the way Brad Anderson talks on stage and says, hey, look at this private clouds, hybrid clouds. We've got this self-server portals, and every end user can ask himself a virtual machine. It gets deployed, and half an hour later, it's running. It's got a database in it, and people are developing it, whatever they are doing. Great stuff. Now, here's the thing, what I see with backup teams. They are not being notified. They don't know there are new VMs. They don't know there are new SQL databases. They don't know anything. So they need to or find out themselves, or find out a way that everything that's being built gets automatically into their backup systems. So that is also a very difficult challenge today. It used to be much more simpler. The IT team built all the different VMs. They talked to the backup guys. Well, most of the time they did. And you could do protection. Now it's getting more and more difficult. And finally, cost. I've been mentioning it already, but this is really a big issue. Do more with less money. That's, I think, the motto of us IT pros for the last couple of years. Less money, but we really need to do more. So you need to find yourself a solution that is good for your environment, but isn't that expensive and doesn't cost you more than the actual products that are running. So these are a few of the challenges we have. And I think with Data Protection Manager and with Veeam Backup and Replication, we can actually offer you this kind of solution that tackles those challenges and then makes sure that you can sleep well at night, that you know that you're protected, that you got backups, and that you can recover when it's really needed. And last but not least is, before I actually start on talking about the scenario, is when you're going to listen to us today, and I hope you stay until the end, of course, and you're going to have to start thinking different. Because what we're going to present you is completely different than the 20 years we are doing backups. I'm coming from the time where we still had physical backups, we had bare metal recovery of our server, and so on, and so on, and so on. But today, backup can be completely different. Data protection, as I prefer to call it, you have to change your mind on it. We're not going to do bare metal recovery number of entire servers. We're going to think virtualization today. We're going to think virtualization, we're going to think protecting about workloads. And that is something we're going to talk about well. All right, let's dive into the scenario, right? So here's our scenario, here is our, as I said, very little environment. We got a few virtual servers that are running some workloads. We got domain controllers, we got a SQL database that, you know, runs the ERP database, some wages, very important, of course, otherwise we don't get paid. We got our SharePoint portal, we got some Exchange. We got a web server that runs some websites that maybe even got some .NET applications that support some databases and so on. We've got, of course, a secondary domain control. We got a secondary Exchange server. And with the affinity rules we have now in Hyper-V, we can make sure that they're not on the same hypervisor. We've got our DPM server virtualized as well. And we've got an old server, which I called pass-through, and the only reason why I called it pass-through was to say it runs an application, and because of old reasons, it needs a pass-through disk. Now, today, with the VHDX format, you probably don't need a pass-through anymore. But because it was still there, it's already there for a couple of years, it hasn't been changed yet, you still have that legacy, and you need to make sure that it's back up. So I added that to our scenario as well. And then, of course, we've got a physical service, right? We've got three hypervisors. By the way, this is, of course, Hyper-V. We are at the Microsoft convention today. But if you want to use the other guys, our scenario works as well. But that's hoping be the last time that I'm using that word. Anyway, so we got our hypervisors. We got our backup and replication server. In this case, we made it physical, but it could be virtual as well. But just for this scenario, it's physical. And then we got an old legacy server, which runs an application which we just can't virtualize. And there can be many reasons why that is. Because it uses a USB dongle to make sure that you're not playing with some licenses and things like that. Or it could be that the vendor just doesn't support virtualization, and you need to have it physical. So we still have that one. That's why I called it legacy here. All right. So with that, we're going to start our approach, and we're going to do this three different ways. So the first layer we're going to talk about, and that is what Doug is going to do, is everything that has to do with the virtualization backup. So if I quickly jump back to this slide, then we're really going to talk about all these virtual servers. How are we going to protect those? What is the best way to get that data, and the best way later on to recover those, right? The second layer we're going to talk about is the in-guest backup. And this is going to sound a bit strange, but what we're going to do is we're going to protect on a virtual level, and at the same time use Data Protection Manager here to really go inside the machines, the virtual machines, and protect the workloads and the workloads alone. And there are a few reasons why we're going to do that. I'm going to talk more about it when we start talking on that layer. And the last one is what I call the legacy backup, which is maybe not a good naming for it, but in the end, we still got that physical server that runs the legacy application, and we also have somewhere a server with a pass-through disk. Now, if you know a virtual machine that has a pass-through disk, you can't protect it as a virtual machine. There's not a single product that can do that, so you still kind of need to work the old way here. All right, Doug?
All right. Thank you, Mike. So when we talk about virtualization in general, the last bullet point is really kind of what comes to mind, is the idea of image base. Because when we take a look at virtual machines, doesn't matter what hypervisor platform they're on, a virtual machine at the end of the day is nothing more than files on disk. And when we talk about backup, what do we back up? We back up files. So when we talk about image-based backup with virtualization, we're really talking about backing up the virtual disks at that image layer. And this has some great advantages, because now when I need to recover an entire VM, I just recover those files, and it's back up and running. don't have to worry about it like I did in the legacy world of a physical server, of first getting an operating system on it or getting it onto the network, and then deploying the agent so that it could then receive the data back that was on it before. You know, that was a lot of work, a lot of steps. So with virtualization, the idea of image-based really, really helps out a lot. The other idea that we can talk about here when we talk about image-based is the fact that you can do it agentless. So you don't have to deploy an agent out onto every virtual machine that you want to back up. Because, again, we're talking to it from the outside at the image layer, not at the inside at the operating system layer, and not at the individual file layer. So with virtualization, everything being shared across the physical host and the physical disks, this means not having agents really does increase the efficiency and helps cut down on those backup times. There's a couple of other technologies. One here is specific to VMware, which is integration with the Virtual Disk Development Kit, or VDDK. And then the other is CBT for Hyper-V. So both of these are essentially about the same thing, is change block tracking. So if we think about a virtual disk, a virtual machine image, it's typically several large files. Now, when we go to backup, if we want to do an incremental backup, we don't want to get that large file every time. We just want to get the changes in that large file. We can't rely on an archive bit anymore, so we have to look at the actual blocks contained within that virtual disk. So the old way of kind of doing things was to take a snapshot, scan the virtual disk, build a hash table, look for changes, and then grab just those changes and make that part of the incremental backup chain. That scan process can take some time. So VMware with VDDK and Veeam with our own change block tracking for Hyper-V, we implemented a scenario where we can actually watch the changes. And so each time we come to do a backup, we take a snapshot, we get the changes of the blocks that had changed since the last time we did a backup, and we can instantly then take that incremental backup, make that part of the recovery chain. So this change block tracking idea does make things much faster, especially when you consider the large disks and the large files that we're talking about being able to back up. So in this scenario, in the virtualization protection, we're really just going to focus on these seven or so servers here in this environment that, as I said, it's 90% virtualized, essentially. So we're going to be doing image-based backups of these virtual machines. The other two virtual machines, as Mike noted, one is the pass-through, so we're going to treat that as a physical. And then, of course, you've got the hosts and the physical servers down there on the bottom as well, which he'll talk about with DPM. But we'll talk about how do we back up and set up a backup job for these virtual machines within Veeam Backup and Replication. So the scenario, take a daily backup of each VM. Seems pretty straightforward. Now, you'll understand why we're talking about daily when Mike starts to talk about some of the application level backup we're going to do with DPM. But essentially, we want to get a daily image of that virtual machine to make it easier to restore. I talked about the change block tracking, getting just those change blocks and making that part of the incremental chain. But there's also, you know, some advantages to being disk-based when you store your backup. Because with disk, storing your backups on disk, we don't have to worry about the linear nature of tape. And that means that we can do some pretty cool things like forever incremental. Meaning, you take a full backup the first time, and it's incremental forever after that. Now, there's different ways to synthetically create full backups from that incremental chain. One way with reverse incremental is to essentially create that new full backup each time you run an incremental. So that new full recovery gets built each time with the increments being pushed out on the back so you can still recover to another point. Another way to do it is to take a full backup, take incrementals, and then on a weekly basis create a new synthetic full recovery, roll it forward, take incrementals, roll it forward. There's pluses and minuses to each approach. Some of them have work much better if you're writing to a deduplication device or something like Windows Server 2012, which gets us to our next thing, deduplication and compression. There's a lot of duplicate data across virtual machines, right? You've got the operating system bits. They're all that data is essentially the same. And then even data within the virtual machines can oftentimes be duplicated. So when we talk about deduplication and compression, we're talking about it at the block level, not at the file level, right? It doesn't matter if we've got an Excel file that both have the same time, date stamp, and the same name. What we're talking about is how many blocks does that Excel file take on the virtual disk, and are they the same between the two? We don't care that it's an Excel file. We just care that the blocks are the same. So when we talk about deduplication and compression, this is something that's built into the product so that you don't have to, you know, go out and buy extra, you know, appliances and those types of things to give you a certain level of deduplication and compression to make your backup smaller. We also talk about a functionality called VeeamZip, which is in our free edition, which allows you to go to a virtual machine and create a zip of that VM and all of its associated files. It's essentially a quick full backup. The nice thing is once you do that, chances are you might be able to fit it onto a USB key. So that means you can take it to, you know, another lab, take it to another location, do a restore somewhere else. It makes it portable. It's zipping up the VMs. But from a backup standpoint, you know, you definitely want to be able to schedule it. On the third thing in this scenario is blocking the log truncation. So as we know, SQL and Exchange, you know, truncating logs is very important as you talk about backup. But because we're going to be doing the application backup scenario as part of DPM, we're going to make sure to block log truncation within the virtual machine backup scenario so that those logs don't get truncated. Right? Okay. And now we have a demo. And this is essentially the steps for going through and creating a Veeam backup job. And we'll talk about the different settings here. And actually, I may pause it here once in a while. There we go. So first, you know, it's everything's wizard-based. So you, again, just go in, give a name and description. And then, of course, you click the next button. Adding virtual machines to a backup is pretty straightforward. Now, in this example, we're going to add two VMs. We're going to add a domain controller and a server. You could also add at the host level. So you could add the host as the backup job, and it'll back up all VMs on the host. So that's the idea of using containers. And Mike talked earlier about the fact that, you know, as new VMs come online, you may not know about it, but by using something like the host or a different container level, as a virtual machine comes into that scope, then it'll get included in the backup job. So you don't have to go and update your backup jobs constantly. Now, if you want to exclude certain disks as part of that virtual machine, you can do that as well. Veeam Backup and Replication uses a proxy repository architecture, where the proxy talks directly to the backup repository. Here's the incremental settings. By default, it will be set to incremental and enable synthetic fulls. So that's the default, and it'll create those on Saturday. Your storage option, again, enabling deduplication, highly recommended. Compression, again, is included. The storage optimizations in that optimize for local target, there's three options there, local, LAN, and WAN. And that's in the current version. What that refers to is the block size that we're going to look at as part of the backup. So local target's going to look at 1 megabyte blocks, LAN 512, WAN 256. Now you might think, well, I always want to use smaller blocks because I'll get better dedup. Yes, you will, but that also means you have more blocks to process as part of the backup job. So there's trade-offs on the larger block size. So you get smaller increments with a smaller block size, but the backup might take a little bit longer. That's why it's optimized for WAN. You can set up notifications, get your emails, the Hyper-V options. There's a Hyper-V guest quiescence here. You can enable this if you're not using the quiescence as part of Veeam Backup and Replications. So if you've disabled application-aware processing within the job, you can use that. And you can also take crash-consistent backups instead of suspending a VM. So this is extremely useful if you're backing up Linux virtual machines, because by default, a Linux virtual machine as part of VSS will pause during that process. So you can take a crash-consistent and not have it pause and not have it suspend that VM. So very important there. I click play? No. And integrity checks, synthetic full deletion, you know, a number of additional advanced options. So here's our guest processing options. And as I noted earlier, we're going to disable the application aware image processing. This will not use Veeam's VSS driver. It will not do log truncation and those types of things as part of this job, because we're going to do that as part of DPM. Guest file system indexing. This is a good option to select. We're not going to select it in this particular job. But what this will do is it'll create an index of all the files on the NTFS volume as well as their attributes, store them with the backup, but also add them to a searchable database that you can then use a web interface to find files for recovery. If either of these options are selected, you do need to supply a username and password for the guest. So once we're not going to once we don't choose these options, then the next step in the wizard is to go ahead and set your schedule. There's some very flexible scheduling options here. This is, as we said, we're going to do this just a daily backup. So every day, 10 p.m., you can do this. There's also other scheduling options, though. You can say periodically, every hour. You can do it monthly. So very flexible scheduling options. But this is the default. We'll just go ahead, click Create. And that will create the backup job. And now our virtual machines are being protected at the image level. Okay, so now Mike's going to talk about what do we do about that in-guest protection.
All right, so now what we've got our virtual machines protected. Every 24 hours, we've got the data inside if we want to. We're not yet truncating the logs, very important here. So what we're going to do is we're going to start doing in-guest protection as well. And the reason why we want that is because we want every 15 minutes protection of SQL, Exchange, things like that, right? So one of the good things about DPM is that it's really written for those kind of workloads. It is from Microsoft. They know best how to protect their own workloads. Well, what they did is built a solution where you can deploy your agents into these virtual machines. Now, of course, this takes some work. Now, you can automate this with Configuration Manager if you want to. You can do it manually installing. You can do it through the DPM console and more. But in the end, after you've got those agents running in those virtual machines, you can start creating protection groups where you can actually do backups up to every 15 minutes. That means every workload that is transactional, Exchange, SQL, you will be able to do that. And that is very important. Now, we're going to do that through using the advantages of the specific VSS writers, because in the end, what DPM will do is it will just talk to that virtual machine inside and will say, hey, VSS, I want to back up SQL. And the SQL VSS writer that has been written by the SQL team will answer, okay, I'll snapshot my database. It continues to run, but I'll snapshot the database and take out the changes that we have and send those over to the DPM server, right? So I'll show you also a quick movie how you're actually building those things and what the options are. But very important is those every 50 minutes. And it gives a couple of advantages. Advantages like if we don't have a total disaster, we can simply use DPM very quickly to recover some SQL data. And you will see later on that there are much more advantages to this scenario. Now, if we look at it, in this case, what I did is I deployed an agent into my SQL box, my Exchange boxes, and my SharePoint box, and started to do protection of those specific workloads. Now, let me get something straight. This is my scenario. This is the way I would set up. But we've got many more machines here. So if you want to deploy an agent to your domain controller and take system states of the domain controller, that's fine. That can be done as well. The same for the www server. If you want to take system states to make sure that you got your latest states of your websites, yeah, why not? You can do that. It's just that in the scenario that we built during all our testing, we didn't want to go that far today, but it's perfectly possible. You can protect anything which is in those machines. And don't think about legacy and pass-through yet. I'll get into that point in the third layer, but that is something also we're going to do with an agent. Well, as I said, for this scenario, we're going to take a few workloads. And what I'm going to show you, or what we do, is we're going to try to take this backup every 15 minutes. And then we have two things we need to choose. We have to choose our express full backups, and we have to choose our log shipping. So what actually happens is you're going to take a number of Express full backups on a daily basis. They can be once a day, this can be twice, three times a day. It depends on your needs. And then every 50 minutes, we're going to send over those closed log files to the DPM server, which means if we want to recover, what we actually will get is if we want, for example, let's say we take an Express full backup at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, right? And every 50 minutes, we're sending over the closed log files. Now, the SQL administrator comes in and says to the backup guy, hey, I need to recover from 3 o'clock. What will happen is if he's recovering, he's going to recover the Express full backup from 2 o'clock and then log forward the 15-minute transaction logs until that point in time, 3 o'clock. Now, you can see, of course, the more Express full backups you take, the faster your recoveries will go. Because let's say you do only one Express full backup a day, and you have to recover 23 hours and 45 minutes of log files, and then forward play those, that can take quite some time. But that is the options we have to choose. And then also we're going to choose our disk allocation. So let's go. Let's have a look. Yeah, that's one. So here we go. So this is the console of DPM. And basically what we're doing here, we're going to create ourselves a new protection group. We got a wizard, typical, you know, this is welcome. We do next. And now we just have to choose servers or clients. So we're going to go for servers. And we're going to now, and like I said, this is an example, I'm going to select a SQL database that's actually running on my DPM server. I didn't have enough place on my virtual environment. But you can see I can select a few databases. Now, maybe a quick second. Now let me go back here for a second because this is, here we go. And now pause testing, no. Here we go. So one of the things you can see is that I just decided to take a few backups. Bad examples, master model, MDB. But you can actually start protecting on the SQL instance level as well. And what that means is every database that comes into that instance will be automatically protected the next time we have an Express full backup. So again, in the scenarios of private cloud and people just dumping in new data into your infrastructures without you knowing, this is one of the solutions that you can use to make sure that you're always fully protected. So I take my databases. So the next thing, I give it a name. In this case, I want short-term protection, disk-based protection. If I would have had a tape drive, I would have gone to the tape as well. And then I need to choose my retention rate. So I want to keep them 5 days on disk. Every 50 minutes, I want to have log files. And then I choose my Express full backups, which I just explained. So I take 2 or 3, I think I'm doing in this demo. Here we go. Some convenient times. I can choose the days of the week, of course. And now I have my schedule ready. The next thing I'm going to do is review my disk allocation, so where I'm going to store those backups. One of the important things, and let me quickly stop it here, is that option co-locate the data. Now you will see me not doing this, again, because of out of resources. But the way DPM works is that for every workload, it will actually make two volumes, a volume with a replica and a volume with, you know, the changes that we're holding. Now, that gave a small problem in DPM 2010 when you had over 300 workloads, because basically what you would have, 300 workloads times two volumes, that means 600 volumes on a raw disk. Now, if you open Device Manager and go look at those volumes, you kind of get what we get, what we call the zipper effect. So you got this volume, and then you all get these little chunks of different volumes. Now, by the time you hit 600 volumes, basically the UI crashes. It can't read it out anymore. If you go to 700, 800, it's not fixed. But if you go to 700, 800 different volumes on one disk, it will crash. NTFS will basically crash. It's not a problem with DPM, but the file system is not ready for that. So therefore, what they brought in DPM 2012 is the possibility to co-locate data in a storage pool. So what I could have done is all my SQL databases, because they're the same workload, save those onto two volumes, one with the replicas and one with the changes, which means I don't have that many volumes. So that's a very important option. The downside of that option today is that it will require a little bit more storage when you start. Now, you will be using that storage in the end, but you have to have it from day one, and I didn't have that on my demo environment. Here we go. So you will see me change that, so I use a little bit less data. You can look at it, you can see, you can modify it as yourself. I think I'm still using too much, maybe I can change it, things like that. There we go. Now, why 7 gigabytes for less than 100 megabytes of data? Because you have a minimum amount on your volume. So then we're going to talk about replicating those data to DPM server. You can do it now, but that's during the day, and if it's a large database, could be a bit of an issue with your infrastructure. Or you can just schedule it to another moment, maybe in the evening. And if you're crossing a WAN, you could actually export the data first, send it over on a USB device or whatever, and make sure that it gets there, and then do the sync with it. And what it does now, it's been creating all of the volumes. It's making sure that the replica has been created, and it's starting to copy over the data, so we have our backups. And from that moment on, every 50 minutes, we're going to send over the closed logs, and the moment we have an express full backup, we'll use VSS to get the changes that are there, send those blocks over to the DPM server, and make sure we got a recovery point that we can use to recover very quickly. Right. So now we got our last scenario, and that's should not be in guest protection. Small mistake, sorry about that. That should be the legacy protection scenario. So we can't do virtual machine backup when the virtual machine has a pass-through. Well, we can, but we cannot backup that pass-through disk. So there's an issue, right? And we also have that physical server. So how are we going to treat those? And we are having the possibility to treat those through bare metal recovery. Now, within DPM, that basically means you're going to use Windows Server Backup to backup the entire server. And what you're actually doing is making from all of your volumes on those on that physical server, you are building a VHDX or VHD, if you're still using that one. Sending that over to the DPM server and making sure that you can do a recovery. Now, if you have that, now that's a bit of a lengthy process. That's something you not want to do every 15 minutes. That's not going to work, right? So if you do that once a day, you're going to send out over all the changes, and you're going to save that on the DPM server. And I'm going to talk about recovery a little bit later, but in the end, you will have a possibility to have new hardware or even use those BMR backups to do a recovery to a virtual machine, which would give you more flexibility. Unfortunately, with our legacy solution that we're having, it won't be possible, but that is, of course, another thing. Now, you can use system state as well. It still exists. It's still out there. But, you know, if you're using system state, you will be using less storage on your backup server. But the problem there, of course, is recovering a system state means you have to rebuild the server first, get the applications on it, make sure that you have the right patch levels, and so on and so on. And then finally do that recovery. So that is not that easy to do. So that is the third layer to make sure that you also have your backups of the legacy solutions that, well, are still there, and we still need to support those, right? So in this case, here is our scenario, pass-through legacy. We're going to select our servers. We're going to do bare metal recovery in Data Protection Manager. We're going to choose a convenient timing to do this, preferred outside the hours because it takes some load on your machines. And don't forget, if you want to do this, because this is a common mistake made by people using DPM and want to do bare metal recovery, you have to have Windows Server Backup on that server enabled. It has to be installed, it has to be enabled actually as a feature, but it has to be there. All right, back to you, Doc.
Okay. So, now we're going to talk about, you know, in terms of recovery scenarios from a virtualization standpoint. You know, I talked earlier, you know, it's just a big, you know, image. So that's what we're going to recover is the image, the entire VM. But also understand you can recover VM files. When we talk about VM files, we're talking about if you just want to restore one VHD, you can do that. Or if you just want to restore some configuration files as part of that, you can do that. But then there's also the idea of guest files. And being able to restore guest files. So we'll start off with instant VM recovery because this is technology, patented technology that we introduced a couple years ago on that other platform. We brought it to Hyper-V last year. And the idea here is, you know, we're storing an image of the virtual machine in this backup file on disk. When it comes to recovery, do I need to go in and extract all of that data, put it back on to, you know, disk that Hyper-V can see, and then once it's all that data is then extracted, then now I can power on the VM. You know, that process could take 20 minutes, could take 2 hours, depending on how much data is there. So we introduced what we call instant VM recovery. The idea of instant VM recovery is running the virtual machine directly from the backup file without extracting the VHDs or VHDXs. So from a recovery scenario, what instant VM recovery gives us is virtual machine goes down in production. I can go into VM backup replication, do an instant VM recovery of that VM, and it will be back up and running in production in less than 2 minutes from the most recent backup. So from a user perspective, that means, you know, all of a sudden server goes down, people start calling the help desk, you know, server's down. As IT pros, you know, you can go and try to troubleshoot why that server is down. You might spend 5 minutes doing that, you might spend an hour, only to realize, okay, we've got to go and do a recovery. So instant VM recovery gives us the capability, as soon as that server goes down, do an instant VM recovery of it, get your users back being productive, and troubleshoot the issue in the background. So that's one of the great benefits of instant VM recovery in this scenario. But of course, there are times, and we'll go through a recovery scenario, where you want to restore the entire virtual machine, maybe to a different site, different hosts, different storage, those types of things, where you don't need the instant VM recovery. VM files and guest files is being able to extract individual items out of that image level backup. So guest files is an area where we call it instant file level recovery, IFLR, and that's, again, being able to pull out an Excel spreadsheet, a Word document, you know, a database file without having to extract the entire VHD and then pull it out all through the backup file. So let's take a look at recovering a virtual machine. Now, this is not going to use the instant VM recovery. This is a scenario where we need to recover the VM back to another host. So we've had an issue. You see our options there. We're going to do an entire VM. We're going to add the virtual machine from a backup. So we go through and select it. There's a number of different ways where you can get to this dialog as well. But now you've selected the VM. You now choose the restore mode. You can restore it to the original location with all the original settings and the original host, or you can restore it to a new location, new storage, new networking. Go ahead and pause that for a moment. Sorry. So what we're doing here is choosing a host, and once we choose the host, now we'll choose a data store on the host. We'll try to choose networking, and then choose additional options like name and those types of things. So this is very helpful if you're recovering the virtual machine to another data center, to another area, because your original data center is a smoking crate or something like that. So go ahead and kick it up again. So here we choose the data store on this new host. So we'll select that. It's going to verify that's necessary. On the network, in this particular scenario, we didn't have a network on this host, so we're not going to be able to choose one. But you would normally see all your networks there on your target host that you'd be able to select. Here, you can choose to keep the same UUID of the virtual machine or change it. You give a reason for the restore because it's a disaster. And you have the option of selecting power on the VM after restoring. You click Finish, and you'll now see a backup job go into running mode, and click over there, and what it's doing now is taking the files out of the backup and restoring back to that host and that data store that we specified in that wizard. So the recovery really is that painless. And because it's an image level recovery, it's that virtual machine, all of its data, everything that was stored in the VHDs is going to be restored just exactly as it was. Once this job's finished, power on the VM, you're good to go.
All right. Okay. Thank you. So the good thing about this, if you think in the disaster recovery scenario that we're preparing, right, what Doug now did is very easy, made sure that he recovered all those virtual machines to other hardware, because we really are in the option that our original hypervisors, well, they're basically dead, they're burned, whatever happened. And we got some old hardware, we found some new hardware, and we might have a good sales team that, or purchase team that quickly got us some new hardware. We've got those new hypervisors. He's recovering all the virtual machines, but you know, in worst case, we're talking about 24 hours old data, because we took those a day ago, right? So now what we're gonna do is we're gonna use DPM to get those specific workload recovery of the last 15 minute points. Now, we don't need to deploy any agents anymore, because those agents were installed in the virtual machine and we took the backups with a Veeam backup and replication. That means if we recover it, the agent just pops up and it runs. The only difficulty could be if you change the name of the server. Then you might be having a little bit of issue with DPM, but if you keep the same name, and in a disaster recovery, that is probably what you're gonna do, then what you can do is, well, everything is running. I've got my DPM server. I just can start recovering now. That means I can do that to my original location. Now, if there is really an issue with that, you could do a recovery to an alternate location as well, and I'll show you that as well. But remember those 15-minute points. So in worst case, what we would be losing would be 14 minutes and 59 seconds, which I think is a good thing you can say to your boss with my solution. In worst case, 14 minutes and 59 seconds. I think they will be happy with that. Well, most of them are anyway, right? So let's go quickly and show you how that actually works, such a recovery. And you're going to see it's the same thing as with Veeam. It is really simple. So what we're going to do is we're going to select our data. So I've got my local lab here. I want to recover a database. And I'm going to choose here somewhere a date, right? Looks a bit different than with Veeam, but in the end, all you have to select is a certain date from a certain time. And here we go, right? So we got 10:45, for example. And then I pressed the recover button, which was hidden a bit. And then we got our recovery wizard. So we're going to do next. And we're going to choose our recovery type. And as I said, and I'll pause it here for a second, you can do a few things, right? You can recover to the original instance of the SQL Server. And in our disaster recovery solution, that is exactly what you're going to do. Even though you know that you moved that SQL Server to another hypervisor, maybe even another data center, if it was a fire or something, you still want to do that to the original one. Now, you can, as you can see, if that's not the option, you can recover everything to any other instance of SQL Server. And by the way, DPM is a very good option that you actually be able to recover to a newer version of SQL Server. So if you've got a database running in 2008 R2, you can actually recover it to a 2012. And that gives you some other advantages in testing. But you can also just copy the files to a network folder, or if you would have a tape solution, you could copy them to a tape as well. Here we go. So the next thing we're going to do, in this case, recovering to the original, I'm going to choose the database state, and I've got two options here, right? I can leave the database operational, or I can say, no, don't leave it operational. Now, what's the difference? If you leave your database operation, then it really is going to start the database at that 15-minute point, right? But remember that I told you, if we have a full express full backup at 2 o'clock, and in every 15 minutes sending over the closed log, a SQL administrator would be possible to take or to start the database at 2 hours, 13 minutes. Well, what we can do as DPM administrators, we can choose 2:15, 2:30. Let me try it again. 2:15, 2:30, 2:45, right? But if you leave it in a non-operational state, then what you're going to do is you're going to recover that database to that SQL. It's going to be mounted and so on. And the log files are going to be on that server as well. Now, at that moment, the SQL administrator can do, with some SQL commands and some magic that those guys can do, something I have no idea how they do it, but they can go to a specific point in time with those log files, which gives them additional options in case of a disaster because of some malware or maybe something else that's inside the database. So now we're going to choose some recovery options. If you have SAN-based recovery possibilities with hardware snapshot, you can choose it. Of course, I cannot. And here you actually see what we are recovering. We're recovering the MDF file. We're recovering the LDF file. And you can see I have two closed log files that I have to send over as well. Right. And then finally, we start. You will see we got the recovery status here. It's running, and of course, because this was the model database, this will be done very, very quickly. If it's a larger database, it will, of course, take some more time. But you can see that it's done 2 megabytes in less than 30 seconds. So very easy, very simple to do. All right, let's continue. So the last thing we have to do is we have to think about bare metal recovery or system state recovery. Now, system state, I'll be short on that one because you have to rebuild your server, you have to put the applications on it. Preferred that it's kind of the same hardware because otherwise system state can be difficult to recover, although it's gotten better lately with Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows Server 2012, but still you could have issues. But you have to know, and this is one of the biggest issues we see in environments, what was the level of patching on your application? What was the level of patching on your Windows Server? Now, if you're honest with yourself, and I'm one of those guys that does backup already for 15 years now, sure, boss, I've got an Excel sheet with the latest patch level and the latest application level. Well, at least I had the first week. And then after 2 weeks, the Excel sheet was not up to date. So that could be a bit dangerous, right? Bare metal recovery, you don't have to care about it. But what you're going to do is you're going to recover some files, which basically became VHDs or VHDXs, and then you're going to take a server, put in the CD-ROM or a USB device or however you want to start your Windows Server 2012 ISO. You're going to say, instead of installing now, you're going to say, I want to recover. You're going to point to these files, and you will do the rest. The nice thing about this, certainly today with Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, is that even if it's recovered to other hardware with other drivers, it will work. What's the downside of other hardware? You probably need a reboot or two, three more so that the Windows operating system can recover itself. The only thing that we saw that it could be difficult is if you had uniprocessor versus multiprocessor. Now, in those days, I don't think you have a server with a single processor anymore. If you do, then you really have a legacy server running out, but that is something you should take care of. And that, of course, takes a little bit more time because you first have to recover the files somewhere to the network, to a share, to a USB device, to whatever, and then start the installation of Windows, choose the recovery option, and then build everything. And by the end of that bare metal recovery, you will actually have your server back in the state as it was the moment you took that backup. So that's a good solution. Now, thank you already very much for staying with us until now. Now let's bring all this thing together and let's build ourselves a, okay, simple, stupid plan as we have it right here. So this is my bad way of using Visio. And what I'm going to do in a real disaster, and we're talking about things I've been burnt down. So I have a few assumptions. We've got the basic infrastructure ready, built again. What do we mean? Well, we have to have somewhere a network. We have to have somewhere a location. 101 in disaster recovery plans, the first thing when I come in and I look at the disaster recovery plan, what do I see? You don't have a new location. Where are you going to put it? If it's a fire or an earthquake or something else, where are you going to rebuild it? Very important. But you have that, you got the infrastructure, you have your backup data ready, you have rebuilt your backup servers, and your hypervisors are ready. Very important. Can you use BMR on your hypervisors as well? Yes. You perfectly can if you want to. Is that a good idea? I'm not sure. If you're running a lot of hypervisors, you probably have one specific image with all the same settings, and it's probably easier to rebuild those than actually recover those. But that is an option I leave to you. Anyway, we have those. We're ready to recover. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to use our virtual backup and our virtual recovery to do our domain controller. That's simple. That's the first thing we need. We are in a Microsoft world. We need that domain controller. We need it up and running, right? Now, the second thing is optional. If you took system states with DPM of your domain controller more frequently than you take the virtual machine backup, then you can recover the more frequent system state as well after you recover the virtual machine. If you don't, well, then you have your domain controller, which is, again, in worst case, 24 hours old. But normally, that's not really an issue. The worst case that you can have is you might lose that one or two uses that's been built that day. You lose those. But other changes into the infrastructure, normally you don't use them. And even if you build large changes on your infrastructure, you just go into VBNR after you did the changes and you say take a backup now so that you have that latest state as well. Okay? Now, the next thing we're going to do is, because we got our domain control, we got it up and running, meaning we can start rebuilding every virtual server we have. So we're going to recover Exchange One, we're going to recover SQL, www, SharePoint, and so on. We're going to recover those as fast as possible. And then we're going to do the same thing. We have our running VMs again, data of 1 day old, worst case scenario, of course. So now we're going to go and get some more recent data in it. And we're going to use DPM again, just the same way as did, only then with real data, not with a model database, of course. But we're going to recover all our SQL databases, our Exchange database. We're going to recover our SharePoint farm. We're going to all do that through DPM. And then we have that situation, but then we, of course, we need to recover our old servers. So we're going to use bare metal recover to recover our pass-through server, and we're going to recover our legacy server. Now, this is, in my case, in my scenario, the last step, but it could be that that legacy server could be more important and you might need to move that. Because what we see, most legacy servers are those that are running somewhere in a warehouse, making sure that the stock is okay or is doing a production, and it's probably more urgent than your SharePoint server or anything else. So, depends on that. It could be also, and this is again optional, that besides doing a bare metal recovery of your pass through and your legacy server, that you're going to use DPM to do every 30 minutes or every hour or even every 50 minutes in that physical server and take some backups as well. So that could be an option as well. And finally, we're going to recover our last servers, which we didn't do yet because of speed and we want to be online as quick as possible. But we still got our secondary domain control that we want to recover and our secondary exchange so that our entire environment is running. Sounds easy, right? Well, it actually is pretty easy to build this as well. But you can see already I had some optionals, so you have to start thinking about it. And of course, everything has to be built in advance. Now, before we go into some best practice and think about the scenario, first, there are some more advantages to use those two products than just disaster recovery alone. And that is the part where I told you in the introduction, use your backups for more than just disaster recovery.
Sure. So when we take a look at, you know, some of the additional advantages, we went through a specific scenario here of a mix of virtual machines. We had a physical server. We had a pass-through. Talking about, you know, in a disaster, how do you recover them? There's a number in using Veeam and DPM together. There's a number of other things that Veeam brings to the table that are pretty unique, and we're obviously pretty excited about them. When it comes to, you know, some granular recovery options, we're talking about virtualizing Exchange and SharePoint. You know, the last thing you want to do is recover an entire Exchange server or an entire SharePoint server just to get it one document or one email. So we've introduced two new capabilities. One is called Explorer for Exchange, and the other is Explorer for SharePoint. So Explorer for SharePoint is new. It's currently in beta. Explorer for Exchange was released last fall, and we have a beta that supports Exchange 2013 that is out now. But what these both do is they work with any offline Exchange database or SharePoint database to allow you to go in and recover individual items. So that offline database might be inside a Veeam backup file, in which case you just go through a simple wizard, choose the Exchange backup, say, hey, I want to recover Exchange items. We'll go in, find the Exchange database files, open those up, browse through all the emails. Nice thing is you can also search. So if you want to need to do some type of e-discovery, you want to search for a certain term, it'll search through the entire Exchange server. Same thing on SharePoint, same idea. We just open up the SharePoint database files. You can go recover documents, different SharePoint items at the granular level. All this without having to first extract all of that data to another location. So Explorer for Exchange, Explorer for SharePoint. Nice thing is those are in our free edition. And you'll notice I said they work with any offline Exchange database or offline SharePoint database. So you don't even need Veeam backups in order to use those capabilities. Other things included with Veeam backup and replication is, of course, replication. This is not to be confused with Hyper-V replica, which I know there's some exciting new advances coming in that with 2012 R2. But the idea here is you can replicate virtual machines within our interface. We have some exciting things like being able to re-IP on the target side. We store rollback points, so if you do end up replicating some sort of corruption, you can roll back to a previous point in time and those types of things. One of the areas that I'm most excited about bringing to Hyper-V is really the next three bullet points. And you know, I talked earlier about being able to run the virtual machine from the backup in the case of instant VM recovery, which is cool if you've got to recover a VM. But what about starting up a group of virtual machines inside a fenced-off area from the network? So now I can take, you know, three or four virtual machines, start them up inside what we call a virtual lab. So virtual lab for Hyper-V, and all running from the backup files. And now what this allows me to do is I can go in and do whatever I want with those VMs. They're fenced off from the rest of the network, and I'm not, any changes I make to those VMs is not going to change any data in the backup file. It's going to be, those changes are stored somewhere else. So that enables a couple of different things. One is what we call sure backup. Sure backup is the idea that once I've taken that image level backup of the virtual machines, I can then automatically boot them, start them up from that backup file inside that fenced off environment, and run a test. I can make sure that they start, I can make sure the applications run. It's automatic verification testing of your backups, of the recoverability of your backups. And because it's automated and it's all scriptable and everything just kind of works automatically, you can do it after every backup for every restore point. So you can test every backup. Another capability is what we call UAIR, or Universal Application Item Recovery. And again, you've got an application that maybe DPM doesn't support, or it's got some, you know, it's a homegrown application. Start up the virtual machines inside this fenced off area. We provide you with a virtual machine gateway so you can get to it from your production network, and then you can use the standard tools to extract data out of that application and back into production. These are technologies that we've had since our version 5 on the VMware platform, now bringing them to Hyper-V. But you can also think of this as just a big on-demand sandbox. You know, Mike talked earlier about, you know, performing upgrades. You want to perform an upgrade? Take a backup, spin it up in this fenced off area, try the upgrade over there. You're doing it on production data that's only minutes old, so you should know if you're going to have an issue or not. No issues? Okay, now you can do it in production. So that's the idea of the sandbox. Now, with version 7, which we're coming out with this summer, we're also going to have native tape support, so you'll be able to automatically write Veeam backup files to a tape device from the Veeam server. A lot of our customers have been asking for that. And we're also going to include built-in WAN acceleration. This is important for when you need to get your backups off-site. So the idea here is, you know, if you have a remote office, you can have a Veeam proxy out there backing up to local disk in that remote site, but now you need to get that data back up to the central office. So our built-in WAN acceleration will allow you to essentially copy that backup data across the WAN, you know, taking into account deduplication and compression, all these types of things, do it very, very efficiently. This is also good for moving it to, you know, a different storage area off-site, you know, keeping your backups off-site. So the built-in WAN acceleration, something we're very excited about. You know, because it's workload-specific, it's tuned to the Veeam backup files. That means that, you know, it's very, very efficient, much more efficient than a general-purpose WAN accelerator would be on the same data. So, what are some DPM advantages, Mike?
They're quite some. So you also have those advantages with DPM. So even not in a disaster, one of the things, for example, I've been talking about SQL, they have a tool that allows you to do self-service recovery for SQL administrators, which means it's still the backup guys at the site, but they are able now to say to the SQL guys, well, I'm going to give you some policies. You are able to recover your own databases and so on. One of the nice things also is primary secondary protection. And when I'm talking about disaster recovery, and you can have one DPM server at your site A, you're going to secondary at site B. And what you're actually going to do is you do all your workload protection to your primary server, your DPM A server. And then at night maybe, or whatever interval you choose, you can actually do a copy of that data to the secondary DPM server so you have something off-site that doesn't, so you don't need to start hassling with tapes and that kind of stuff. That is now very important, I think, about DPM, and it is actually something we didn't mention about Veeam, but it is fully PowerShell. you know, these days, private cloud, automation, all that kind of thing. So it's fully PowerShell. Actually, everything you do in DPM is actually just a PowerShell command at the back, right? It also has got an integration pack for Orchestrator, if you know System Center Orchestrator these days, so you can actually do all that automation without the need of knowing PowerShell. And then maybe the most exciting feature is the one-click SharePoint protection, because whether we like it or not, protecting SharePoint isn't that fun. It's actually most of the time a very difficult job. Well, if it's been enabled, then through DPM you will see the name of the farm, you can click it, and you actually have your full protection. So great stuff from DPM side as well. And as Doug mentioned, now if you combine those two again, and you do those sandbox, as he's calling it, then you can actually, together with DPM, test out your disaster recovery plan. Now, how about that? After all these years, we would be able to say, yeah, we tested our disaster recovery plan every 3 months, which basically never succeeded the last 10 years, but something you can think about it. Now, few short best practices, and then I think we can call it a day, so you can get your swag and your beers, because you earned it at this point. Make sure you go to the drawing board first. You have seen us putting a few concepts on these slides. You have seen us making a few things. But don't just start on it. Do some clicks and yay, we're protected. Really think about it. Start from the Visio side or use any other tool that you want to use to build this. But make sure that you have all these concepts and that you built them. I had to restart 2 times because I was too lazy to draw it out first. My boss didn't like that. Lost me quite some time. Testing. Test your disaster recovery plan. You can build as nice as you want on that Visio sheet. At a certain moment, you need to test it, and you can make mistakes. We deliver you the tools. We deliver you the possibilities to do this, but try out. Take the time. And then last but not least, put it to work. Don't just let it sitting there. All right, we got our backup solution. We got disaster recovery. Yay. Now let's do some other stuff. Use it to test out those upgrades, to make sure that you can do application changes or whatever. You can actually use it. We have a customer that uses this fenced off environment, spin it up, and teaches the developers on what they're doing there. And then he destroys it in the evening, and then they can start working on the real deal. So you can use that investments in your backup solutions and all the hardware we have. You can use that on a daily basis as well. And with that, we got some track resources, of course. Those slides will be downloadable as well. If you want to know more about this solution, you can go to www.veeam.com. Under the section of white papers, you find this written out entirely, what we did, how we did our approach, and use that maybe onto your own environments. We have to show this from Microsoft.
I have free stuff, too.
Yeah. Don't forget to do your evaluation and win something, which I think the left one is the most interesting. And then thank you from the both of us for sticking with us until the end. If you have questions, please, this is the moment, but please use those microphones so that they are at the recording as well.
And we have free backup as well, and 8 gig USB keys, so.
Yes.
You want some of those?
I'll speak, I don't know if you can hear me. The question about the storage footprint for the 3 different scenarios you provided. You had your the virtualization, the legacy, and can you talk a little bit about the storage footprint?
Okay, so the question is, what about the storage footprint? Because we have 3 different layers at this moment, which means do we have all backups 3 times, right? Now, it will depend a bit on how you're going to choose it and how fast you want your disaster recovery plan. So based, if they say you have to be back up in 24 hours, then your storage footprint is going to be a bit bigger, but then, of course, they have to pay for that storage as well. Now, you can, of course, start to exclude. It wasn't maybe not that clear in the video, but you can start excluding some volumes. So on your virtualization layer, that you just take those virtual machines without the actual data. And then you can have DPM doing the data, which means you don't have a double footprint. So there are possibilities to work around that one.
And the other thing, too, is when I talked about Veeam built-in deduplication, that's only at the job level. So for each job, you get a dedupe set of files, but we don't dedupe across jobs. So one of the things we've seen great success with is if you store those Veeam backups on a Windows Server 2012 volume with dedupe enabled, because it's post-processed, it works extremely, extremely well. So Windows Server 2012 built-in deduplication on the volume level, we'll take all those Veeam backups and compress them down even further. We've got a number of users that are doing that today, and they've seen tremendous results. Other questions?
Yes.
Can you use the microphone?
So I have a similar situation, which what you guys showed in different levels. I'm trying to think about how to utilize Veeam 7 that's going to be coming out for Hyper-V, as well as DPM. I'm running 2012 SB1. I have a single server for backups running these two applications. And I would like to back up to tape, okay? Not only the Veeam stuff, but also the DPM stuff. And the tape drive is connected directly to that single backup server using the SAS. So, yeah. You know, how do I kind of go about doing this? Am I going to use DPM to back up the Veeam data? I know I can't use the Veeam to back up DPM because it's hidden. So,
we can talk a little bit more, you know, in terms of scenario. But you know, if you only have one tape device, one server to connect it to, you know, you can't share the tape device between the two applications. So, off the top of my head, I would say you would use DPM. Right, to write everything to tape, including the Veeam files, write those to tape. That'll work. You know, if you want to use Veeam and Veeam tape support, there is a file backup option within Veeam, so you could, in theory, backup the DPM volumes.
Yeah, you can. I know they're hidden.
Using Veeam as
I know
well.
They're hidden, but actually, you can reach them.
Yeah,
you there
can.
Are. Yeah,
it'd be a little bit more convoluted, but you can go. You can kind of go either way because within the Veeam tape support, there is. How many people remember NT backup, right? Think of our tape support as kind of like NT backup.
So and it will see the volume, even though it's hidden?
Yes.
It's through a pointer.
Yeah.
I should have a live demo environment of DPM, and I would be able to reach it. It's a bit hidden. It's through a pointer. But yeah, you can actually get those. Because the good thing is, and we haven't might said that, but he talked about those explorers that Veeam has for SharePoint, Exchange. Well. With DPM, what you have on those volumes is the real database, which means if you know how to get through the pointer, you can double-click on the database, select it, and you can do dot item level recovery on DPM backups, which I haven't said.
So either scenario will work. I think DPM backing up everything to tape would probably be a little bit easier, maybe you know, just from a process standpoint, but Veeam could certainly handle it as well with version 7 and tape support. Yes.
Monitoring restore points for possible corruption. Is there any mechanism to do that?
So there are a few mechanisms in DPM. What it does, it has consistency checks, and from the moment it feels something goes wrong, it will do a consistency check, which means it's going to go a block level comparison on your restore points. And under the hood, it has some other mechanisms to make sure that you don't have corruption.
Yeah, and then Veeam has similar type of things in terms of writing the restore points and creating the synthetic files. But the other thing is the capability of that Sure Backup recovery verification of, you know, in version 7 where you'll be able to schedule and you can actually test every restore point. So you can spin up a restore point and verify that, yes, it is good and there's no corruption there. Yes?
One more. You kind of mentioned at the beginning you predicated the replication, knock on replication, because it would pass on malware or corruption. Mm-hmm. What is Veeam doing with their replication offering that's going to avoid that?
Yeah, so in terms of, you know, when we talk about replication, the idea is you replicate, and the target VM will always be the most recent, so you can just power it on. But what we also do is we store restore points along with that as well, so similar to our synthetic technology, so that if you need to start that replica VM from an earlier point in time, you can choose it within the interface and say restore it from 2 hours ago instead of, you know, 10 minutes ago. And what we'll do is we'll discard all the changes, we'll rebuild the VHD and start it from that point in time instead. So there's a little bit of a technology difference between how we do it for Hyper-V. That's how we do it for Hyper-V. You do need the interface in order to, you know, start it from an earlier point in time. It's a little bit different on VMware because VMware we utilize snapshots. And we can start up from any snapshot within the virtual infrastructure client.
All right, gentlemen. And with that, if you have more questions, please, we will be in about 20 minutes. We will be at booth 1001, where you can find us for more questions. But it will depend on the traffic here, how fast we get there. So thank you very much for being here. Enjoy the rest of the evening. Enjoy the beers and the feed, and make sure you get enough of these stuff. Okay. If you want one, please get one. Thank you very much again.
Thanks.
Have a great week here at New Orleans.